Sharp Money VSiN, Mike Somich, I'm Patrick Maher. Every Sunday night, we're going to provide a look ahead to the next week in the NFL. And as we say hi on our inaugural edition of Sharp Money, Mike Somich, you just said before the program started, the 81 combined points, Ravens-Bills, a Bills shocker, down 15 in the fourth, 41-40 win, was a great game. And I had no interest in the game. Why do you say great?
Oh, see, how could you not have interest in that game? Those are, I think, the two best teams in the AFC.
Correct.
That we got to finally see each other. Now, I could take the argument we didn't learn the most from that game today, but it was a phenomenal football game going back and forth. And after watching football all day, where we saw 11 unders and one over, and we saw basically the JV teams out there, it was nice to get the best game of the weekend on Sunday night. Before this, it was the Chiefs and the Chargers that gave us the best football game. There was not anything those defenses could do. And look, Baltimore has a very good defense. Buffalo, we'll find out if they have one of those elite defenses this year. But the offenses from both of those teams were executing on such a high level that we did not see the rest of the day. I don't know how you could come on here and not be jacked to talk about that Buffalo-Baltimore game.
Because, Somich, the point of Sharp Money every Monday when you wake up, wherever you find your podcast, we're going to have information that you can deduce and provide moving forward. What I just saw from the Bills and what I just saw from the Ravens, I saw it in the postseason last year. I know these are two teams that are going to win 12 to 15 games. I know exactly what I'm getting with them. It's going to be a shootout. I learned absolutely nothing, except we're going to see these two teams in the postseason and they're going to go back and forth and it's going to come down to the final minute. Next, rinse, repeat. Bills, Ravens, same thing every year.
We did learn that Keon Coleman is a true threat at wide receiver one for the Buffalo Bills. We didn't know if it was going to be Shakir again this year, who else was going to step up. So when you're looking at the Bills from a prop perspective, if they're down at half, Keon Coleman is the guy that you want to be targeting for those in-game props. We did learn about him. The rest of it, you're right. Look, we knew these two teams were going to be very good, so there's not a ton of takeaways from it, and I'm not changing my ratings for either of these teams off this game. It was what we expected, a phenomenal football game with explosive offenses.
Okay, so we look ahead, and again, I mean, it was a great game. I mean, up and down, two great quarterbacks, your two favorites to win the MVP, your two favorite teams to win the Super Bowl. So expectations were Jackson would shine, Allen would shine. Expectations to come back down 15 in the fourth for Buffalo, probably not, but you got that as we're recording right after the game finished, 41-40, a winner for the Bills. Now we look ahead here, Sharp Money, and Baltimore is going to be hosting Cleveland. That's an interesting spot if they posted the number yet, because after that, Baltimore does have Detroit, who we're going to get to. Now Buffalo is going to be at the Jets in week two. Do we have numbers on those?
We do not have a Baltimore-Cleveland number yet. I would be surprised if we don't have it by the end of the show. Buffalo, I did see a number earlier, but I'm not seeing it on the board right now. So we don't have numbers up for either of these teams. So it looks like the books took them down right as the game ended.
Okay, I want to get to what I think is the standout game and the standout team of week one, where, again, Mike, we have to be dangerous. You don't want to have overreactions in week one, but you want to have some deductions. You want to start building those data points so we can provide information for the following week. But just as we take a breath after that exhilarating game we already knew was going to happen between the Ravens and Bills, macro picture on week one, you mentioned the unders. What else stands out to you?
Look, the secondary play is not great in the NFL right now. Neither is the offensive line play. If you have teams that can dominate with a pass rush and have a decent secondary, they're going to be able to hold teams down, because even with a very good quarterback, if you're getting consistent pressure, it's not going to be enough to be able to move the football. And that's what we saw today in the Texans game against the Rams, where both of those quarterbacks just were constantly under duress. It doesn't matter that you've got Nico Collins out there. It doesn't matter that you've got Puka Nacua and Davante Adams. You're not going to be able to consistently move the football if you're always giving up just a ton of pressure. That was really the big thing for me this week, is that we saw defensive lines dominate offensive lines and create quarterback nightmares out there on the field.
And I would say some of those darlings as far as dogs, you mentioned Houston, How about the Giants and others? They do fall as far as dogs that were favorites coming in amongst the sharp bettors. And then also survivors survive, whether you're talking Cincinnati, whether you're talking Tennessee playing very well in Denver, yet Denver winning, or even Arizona, a late drive there, New Orleans with an opportunity, survivors surviving in week one.
Yeah, it was not pretty, Patrick. It wasn't pretty in any way, shape, or form. Denver looked like they wanted to give that game away multiple times. Arizona had a 2-score lead on New Orleans the majority of the fourth quarter and had multiple opportunities to really put that game away, and they couldn't consistently move the football against what is not a very good New Orleans defense. But everyone gets through. It's the first time in 3 years the number one pick has not lost in Circa Survivor. So we're not losing a big portion of that pool. And people able to check some boxes on some teams that maybe they're not looking to play in the future. Arizona, one of those teams, not a ton of future value. They provide the check mark for everyone who used them. And we'll see if people want to use them down the line. There's a chance again next week. There's a chance again in week five. But that's about it.
I want to start with a team, not because I'm a fan of the team, but I was concerned about this team. You and I both like Green Bay. I had Green Bay as a potential Super Bowl team before the Micah Parsons trade, now with a bullet. And let's talk about the Lions, who regression from 15 wins was expected, Samo. That was about as bad a performance. I'm looking right now, 13 points. They scored 6 points when it mattered. The offense was disjointed. Goff, don't look at the box, was terrible in the game. And the defense, the coordinators are missing. And in Green Bay, the Packers dominated the Lions today, 27-13.
A complete win by the Green Bay Packers. Jordan Love was on fire in the first half. He was able to get anything he wanted. His first 8 passes caught by 8 different receivers. And we're talking about 10 yards, 12 yards, 22 yards, 25 yards. We're not talking about these little dink and dunk plays down the field. They were getting big yardage consistently, and that's the scary part about this Green Bay team. If anyone steps up, all of a sudden you have an elite offense and Jordan Love at the helm, who, for everything you want to say about him, was number 8 in EPA coming to this season over the last 2 years at quarterback, and that includes the terrible first half 2 years ago and being injured 75% of the year last year. But I don't even think that that is the biggest story for the Packers coming out of this. That defense could be absolutely legit. We saw Parsons play just 30 snaps in this game. He gets a sack, one of 5 sacks for the Green Bay Packers against an offensive line that, Patrick, this was a top 5 unit in Detroit last year. It's like 15th. 20th in the NFL this year, and people are still sleeping on it. They could not protect Goff, and this two-headed monster running game was completely lackluster. Montgomery ends the game with 25 yards, Gibbs with 19 yards on the ground. I didn't love the Lions coming into the season. I am worried that this is going to be a team that is fighting to make the playoffs if this is the type of performance we see from them week in and week out.
You mentioned the offensive line. As far as the Lions, it's not just Frank Ragnow at center. They lost the guard as well. Penei Sewell, who's a top 15 player in all of football, got pushed around by Micah Parsons, and we should talk about the impact. It wasn't just the one sack. Parsons on the run, Parsons pushing back with pressure, was tremendous against the best right tackle he's going to take on this year. And Penei Sewell, I thought you nailed it with the Packers, a complete team win. Completely dominated. Love was great in the game. And then you go to the Lions. My friends laughed at me when I said I'd give up. I'd take Johnson back and give up my head coach right now. And I would. We are going to find out exactly what Dan Campbell is about this year. And we should look ahead because they will be taking on the Bears at home. And right now, of course, the Bears yet to play. We'll get to that game tomorrow night hosting Minnesota. But the Lions are laying 4.5 at home off the loss.
I sure am not excited about laying over a field goal right now with this Detroit team. This game opened at 5.5, or was 5.5 over the summer. We're seeing that come down after we saw this Detroit performance today, before we see what we get from the Bears this week. It's a nightmare spot for Detroit because that is now a game they absolutely, and I don't want to say it's a must win for Detroit, their season's over if they don't, but it is a sure nice to have type game for Detroit because you don't want to start out 0-2 in the division, and you don't want to get smacked in the face by your offensive coordinator who switched over to a Bears team. Fascinating start to the season for the Lions here. I don't like betting games before the Monday Night Football game happens, specifically because there's the injury concern for one team, which is not for the other. But if you told me to take a side right now, Bears plus 4.5, I think is a pretty juicy number because you're getting over a field goal with an offense that should be better. And the Bears have the better defense, and now we're not sure if they have the better offense, which is wild to say because this was an elite Detroit offense just 1 year ago.
With a new coordinator, Detroit ran for 46. With a new coordinator on defense, they gave up chunk plays after chunk play and just methodical drives as well from the Packers. It was ugly, a beatdown in Green Bay, the Packers over the Lions. You take a look at the Packers, they will be hosting, so they stay home, Washington. Washington was one of those catching six with the Giants, everybody on the Giants. Washington came out very businesslike today and took care of business.
I thought the Commanders looked very good. And this is a team that I did not love coming into this season. Now, I don't know what to do with the Commanders' defense because Russell Wilson, he couldn't make a taco right now if you gave him the ingredients. He's done cooking. He was awful in this game. He looked like he was absolutely lost. He wasn't able to get neighbors involved into the game. The moon balls weren't working for him. There's no real semblance of a running game for this New York Giants team. So if you're not getting that passing attack to be crisp, they're in a world of trouble. And this isn't like a great Commanders defense, right? If you go into the season and you say, what's the ceiling for the Commanders defense? It's around 10th in the NFL. So it's not like this was a defense you could not get to. I wouldn't be surprised if we start hearing Jackson Dart things as soon as week three. Dable wouldn't commit to Russell Wilson being the quarterback in the postgame interview. I wouldn't be shocked if we see that move happen sooner rather than later.
And Dayball had the issue with neighbors where he tried to, neighbors was yelling at him. That's insubordination on the sideline. He tried to dap him up. Neighbors completely ignored him. You're going to start to see things in that New York media start to fray a little bit. You're going to be hearing Dart's name like crazy. It's not a great Commanders defense, but whoa and woof with this Giants offense, 231 total yards. Disastrous. And on the other side, which is a very good defense, they gave up 432 to the Commanders. And I'll just say this, just watching that game, and I had it isolated for a bit, Samo, Jaden Daniels, I mean, he controls the game. I'll look at the box, 19 of 30, 233, 68 on the ground, but there's just this rhythmic way with which he plays where he controls everything.
He's so good. And I wanted to come into this season and say, grain of salt. We'll see what happens in the second year. We saw CJ Stroud have a phenomenal rookie campaign. He comes back. He's not as good in year two. You just watch this game. Jaden Daniels is in total control. He's in total control. He can make every throw. He's got a massive arm. His legs are such a threat. When he's healthy, if he stays healthy, he's going to be just as good as he was last year. And you've got support in the running game as well. They go for 220 yards on the ground. Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt, who everyone talked about, Bill, heading into the season, he gets 10 carries, 82 yards. He gets into the end zone. He rips off a 42-yarder. This is a complete Washington offense. The question for me with Washington is, can they stay healthy? But until they're hurt, why would you not want to be interested in backing this football team?
And by the way, we've got a banger, a must-watch in week two with the Commanders at the Packers. And right now, here, Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, it's Green Bay laying 3.5.
I was really hoping this was 3, Patrick. I really wanted a Green Bay 3 in this game because I would have been all over a Green Bay 3. I'm going to keep an eye on this one because I want to see if people are going to look. I was high on the Packers coming into this. I had them as a favorite over Detroit on a neutral before this week. I have them as a 4.5-point favorite in this game, so I'm probably going to bet 3.5, even if that's what we end up with. But man, I'm going to hope I can get a 3 at some point during this week because the difference between 3 and 3.5 so massive. And I want to see how this market reacts to a Commanders team that, look, even when this game was still in question, when it was 14-6, when it was 7-3, it was never really in question. The Commanders felt like they were in total control of that football game. I'm hoping that the market gives them a little bit more respect. We see an upgrade to the Commanders that's similar to the upgrade to the Packers, and because of that, we'd see that key number of 3 flip at some point during this week.
Okay, remember to bookmark Sharp Money. It's going to be there when you wake up on Monday mornings after a full slate of NFL action. Mike Somich, I'm Patrick Maher. Again, it's week one. We understand. It's dangerous. You don't want to overreact to what you saw, but deductions do need to be made, and we need to start building those data points. You're up. Let's go ping pong a little bit here. Something that stood out to you, a game that you pick.
Look, I want to talk about Houston and the Rams because I think this is one of the most, specifically this Houston team, is one of the most lucrative teams to bet right now. We talked about this on Friday night on VSiN Live over on Mad Dog Sports Radio. Under was my favorite bet of the week in this game. It was at 43.5. I write an article for VSiN every Wednesday talking about week two lines. One of the lines I targeted was the under in Tampa Bay and the Houston Texans in week two. That was 46.5 on the look ahead. It's reopened at 44.5. It's still too high. This Houston team could be one of the best dead under teams that we have seen in the NFL in a very, very long time. This is an elite top three defense. They were facing Davante Adams and Puka Nacua today, and that Rams offense was fortunate to be able to get in the end zone twice and put up 14 points. And their offensive line is probably the worst in the NFL. They're not going to be able to run the football. They're not going to be able to consistently give Stroud time to attack down the field. They are just a stone-cold under team until further notice. I have the line the total at 42 in this Week 2 game. I still think it's 2.5 points too high.
Yeah, the Bucs at Houston, we'll get to that in a second. But I ask you, Samich, what's Stroud to do? I mean, he was under duress without even Tunsil this year. He was 19 of 27, 188 in a pick, and none of it was his fault. None of it. And one thing we have to say about this Rams team, one, I thought Stafford with the back looked sharp. Two, that young defense is going to consistently get better, and that ended up being the difference in the game with the rush late there from that Rams defense.
Yeah, big turnover for the Rams as the Texans were putting together one of their better drives when they absolutely needed mm-hmm. to have it, down 14-9. Frustrating game if you had the Texans plus three, because they had a couple opportunities where it felt like they could have gotten within three and still lost the game. But that Rams defense, they just stepped up. A huge Tillman punch by a rookie for them to be able to pop the ball out. We see Fisk jump on it for the fumble recovery. Second-year player, one of their big pieces on the defensive line. The scary part about this Rams team is that you go and you watch the rest of these NFC West teams. And we saw Seattle and San Francisco play. We'll get to that. It wasn't pretty. We saw Arizona struggle in New Orleans. The Rams are going to get better throughout the season. This defense is going to improve. If Stafford's back is good for 17 games, this is probably your best team in the NFC West.
Totally agree with you. And the Rams head to Tennessee. We'll get to Tennessee and Denver here on Sharp Money in just a bit. But Tennessee, all of a sudden, I don't know what stood out to you as I take a look at the number right now. It is the Rams laying 5.5, feels heavy, and 42.5 on the total. I don't know what stood out to you about Tennessee. I will say I thought the defense played well against the defense we're potentially talking about in Denver, the best in football. 42.5 on the total. I wouldn't be afraid of the under with the Rams in Tennessee as we look ahead to next week.
I kind of want to lay it with the Rams. I feel like we got a false flag. If you look at the final scores of some of these games, you always have false finals that come up. And to me, this Broncos-Titans game is one of those false finals. Bo Nix was atrocious in this football game. He was a absolute disaster in this football game. On top of that, you saw the Broncos muff a punt at their own 25-yard line. What happens on the next possession? Two sacks for the Broncos defense, 4th and 35, and you see the Titans have to punt it back to Denver. Denver could have won this game by 20 if they got a decent performance from Bo Nix and they didn't make bonehead mistakes. The leading receiver today for the Tennessee Titans was Tony Pollard. Now, I realize Ridley will be the leading receiver in the majority of games. It's really hard when you're going against the Broncos secondary, specifically Surtain, your reigning defensive player of the year. But I'm not scared of anything on this offensive side for the Titans. And look, Cam Ward, he'll have better days. He's going to have growing pains, especially early in this season. I watched so much of him at Washington State and Miami. He loves to try and back out of the pocket, roll around the ends. That doesn't work when everyone's as fast as you are. It works great in college. It does not work in the NFL. He needs to learn that, because you can't be taking 16-yard sacks, which he took multiple times in this game. It completely blows drives up. I don't think this was as good of a Tennessee performance as it looks on paper. I think this was a bad Denver performance.
Totally agree. Samich, early lean, lay the 5.5 with the Rams next week at Tennessee. Let's finish up that Houston and Los Angeles game today. Houston will head home, and here comes Tampa. We can talk about the Atlanta-Tampa game here in just a bit, but the Texans 1.5 and 44.5 on the total.
Tough to know what to do with the side here, because the Bucs, we'll get into them. Man, they looked like a mess on offense as well. Ibuka looks phenomenal in his first game of the season, but that offensive line couldn't create holes for Bucky Irving. That brought down the explosiveness of it. It's really just Ibuka and Evans. There's not much behind them from an offensive perspective. I love this under. I can't get around this under 44.5. I mean, the Texans, the upside for their offense is not great. We did see an improved pass rush today from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now they get to face this Texans offensive line. And on the other side, good luck moving the football without Wirfs at offensive line and having to deal with these two weapons. Right now, the Rams offense is better than the Bucs offense. And 100%. The Rams put up 14 points, and it felt kind of lucky for them to get 14 on the board against the Texans. Under 44.5 for me.
You know, you and I did a hit on Mad Dog Sports Radio on VSiN Live, which is a show I host, and you're on weekly on Fridays. And when we got to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Atlanta Falcons, I just threw my hands up, and I said, I just don't know what to do with this game. Ends up 23-20 winner for Tampa Bay. Mayfield, who struggled, was great late. I thought Penix, you know, 27 of 42, 298, a touchdown, a crazy run where somehow he kept his balance for a touchdown late. This one was back and forth. Did you take anything? Bucks, Falcons.
I gained some respect for the Falcons in this game. I thought they did a very good job of being able to utilize the weapons they have. We saw Kyle Pitts 7 for 59. Bijan Robinson was effective through the year. Not able to run the football, but again, they're on their third string right tackle at this point. So that's going to be tough for them to protect Penix's blind side and be able to run the football. I thought they did a fairly good job protecting Penix. Only 4 quarterback hits, 1 sack today for a Bucs team that did invest in their pass rush during the offseason. You need more from Drake London. He goes 8 for 55, a lot of dinking and dunking stuff. Ends the game with 15 targets. By the way, if you're a prop player, London's going to have some big games if he's getting 15 targets a game, and I do expect he is going to be the one who feasts inside this Atlanta offense. So I actually upgraded the Falcons even on the loss just slightly because I thought the Bucs should be favored in this game, even with the issues that they have on the offensive line right now and in the wide receiving room. So I'm going to leave the rating the same for the Bucs. I'm going to upgrade the Falcons just slightly here, but these are probably your two best teams in the AFC South after what we saw today.
Yeah, we talked about the Bucs at Houston. Again, the Bucs catching 1.5 off the dramatic win today. Hard to talk about Minnesota. We'll get to them in a little bit here on Sharp Money because they're going to be playing tomorrow night as you download this tonight at the Bears. The Falcons are going to be at the Vikings, Mike, in week 2. Right now, the number is 4.5 with the Vikings laying it and 45.5 on the total. My assumption, just initial blush, would be points, points, and points.
Yeah, dog here. Dog or pass right now, especially with not seeing what we're going to get from J.J. McCarthy. Now, that's the big question mark here. Like I said, again, if I'm going to bet games that have a Monday night team in them on Sunday night, I want to bet against the Monday night team because I want to have the injury upside for the team that I do not have bet. Let's say J.J. McCarthy gets hurt. What's this number reopen at? Let's say Justin Jefferson gets banged up. What's this number reopen at? It ain't 4.5, right? We're sub 3 in both of those cases. And so if I wanted to get a bet in right now, it would be the Falcons 4.5. Right now, that would be the lean for me as well. But I want to see J.J. McCarthy because J.J. McCarthy could also make this a 5, 5.5 point game. And basically, the idea if McCarthy plays well tomorrow night, all of a sudden I'm less excited about catching 4.5 here than if we just go in with an unknown.
Okay, Samich, a very popular dog was Seattle at home, kind of a house of cards with the 49ers with the injuries. There were questions about McCaffrey. He did play coming into this one. But if you told me a dude named Tonjes, and again, I had no clue who he was, San Francisco 49er, backup tight end, Kittle got banged up. If you told me he was going to have a touchdown, Purdy was going to throw a couple of picks and then be great late, and San Francisco, a 17-13 winner, they do cover the number in Seattle.
Yeah, see, here's my thing. I think Brock Purdy stunk in this game. Like, stunk out loud. Both of the picks were atrocious decisions, balls that never should have been thrown. One of them was a quadruple-covered Pearsall down the field. The other one was just a little lollipop when everyone was watching him throw it down the middle. That pass down to Tonjes shouldn't have been a touchdown. Woolen just completely misplayed it. He was in front of the tight end and let Tonjes go through his body and be able to snatch the ball away. If that ball gets picked, this game's over. Seattle wins. If Seattle doesn't turn the football over down on their own end, they probably win this game. And that is just basically Bosa bum-rushing cross into the hand of Darnold, and he drops the football. There's a fumble, and you see San Francisco get the ball back. Both of these teams were bad today, Patrick.
Yep.
It's not like I want to go and say Seattle played a great game. Neither of these teams played very well. San Francisco has huge issues in the kicking game. Moody probably got left on the tarmac. Their defense is not very good. They were getting pushed around with the running game during the first half. They make adjustments, then Darnold starts throwing it all over the place in the second half. There's three good defensive players on San Francisco. That's it. Then there's eight other dudes. Right now we have injuries to Kittle. That looked like a calf. It looked like a soft tissue injury. It looks like multiple weeks for him. All of a sudden, he's out of here. Jennings left the game as well. We're waiting for an update on him. It's McCaffrey, Pearsall, and nothing else right now in San Francisco without any defense. I've got less than zero interest in backing this San Francisco team from a side perspective until we get a legitimate injury update on both of those guys. I'll also say this. McCaffrey receiving props, Pearsall receiving props, those are numbers that you want to look for on Wednesday when they come out to play toward the over if they are anywhere near what they were this week, because both of them were the two that benefited with all of the targets once we saw Kittle leave and once we saw Jennings leave.
If you have no, I guess you don't have any confidence right now, we'll have to wait for the injury report on the 49ers and the rest of the teams here, sharp money. If you don't have confidence, well, I'm going to give you seven because that's what the 49ers are laying at the Saints in week two and 43.5 on the total.
This is one of those spots where I wish it wasn't the Saints, right? And even with it being the Saints, before we came on the show, I started looking around like, can I catch the hook anywhere? Can I get the 7.5? Because I'd be kind of tempted to take the dog if I can. And the market kind of agrees with me. Right now, DraftKings sitting there at 7. Everywhere else, 6.5. So we have seen movement already down toward New Orleans off the 7s that were in the market. It's Saints or pass, which is wild because I don't like the Saints. I think they're the worst team in the NFL. But again, when you're betting, it's not the team's talent. It's the number. Is the number worth enough? And 7 is very, very close to that number for me. 7.5 would have a Saints bet in my account.
And we should probably talk about the Saints, who today, Arizona 2013 winner. A couple things. One, survive, right, Mike? Because a lot had Arizona in this one. The Saints are awful. I didn't take a ton away from Arizona here. I thought Murray was competent, if you want to put it that way. I didn't take a ton away from either team, to be honest with you. We knew the Saints were going to be terrible. A longest shot to win the Super Bowl, obviously. And Arizona, a survivor darling today. Did you take anything from the win?
Little disappointed in the Arizona defense. I thought Arizona could take a big step forward on the defensive side of the football, and that's how they'd go over their win total. That's how they compete for the division and for the playoffs in the NFC. And that defense, man, I was someone who had Arizona in survivor. I was scared when New Orleans had the football. You shouldn't be scared when it's Spencer Rattler who is behind center and you don't have all that many weapons. I thought Kamara looked fine. I thought Olave looked fine. Jennings ends up being your leading receiver there. Juwan Johnson ends up being your leading receiver there for the Saints. I thought this was a bad performance on the defensive side for the Cardinals, and I hated the lack of the ability to just put a team away, because they had multiple opportunities to step on the throat in this game and they just let the Saints hang around. And that is something that you love to bet on when you're seeing it. If you have a dog playing Arizona and Arizona's going to let people hang around, you're going to get teams that cover against them. So this is a team that I don't really want to back until I see this defense play better or them to have that killer instinct.
Mike, Minnesota is going to travel to Pittsburgh, and right now that number, I believe, is Pittsburgh laying 2.5. Yep, 2.5, totals 41.5. We should talk about Pittsburgh today. So Pittsburgh, and Rodgers was great, got to give him credit, 4 touchdown passes, was tremendous in the game, but the Jets offense against that Steelers defense, this total closed, Samich, at 38. We had a 34-32 winner with the Steelers beating the Jets in Jersey.
Yeah, I mentioned it at the top of the show. The Sunday games before Sunday Night Football, 11-1 to the under. The one exception, the lowest total on the board, the Steelers-Jets game, which flies over the total. It cleared the total in the first half. End up with 76 points. I was interested to watch Aaron Rodgers in this game because he is now a year off that Achilles issue, right? He clearly was not happy with that Jets organization. He thinks he's in a much better position now that he is with Pittsburgh, and he looked happier. He looked more like Aaron Rodgers than we had seen last season in New York. I don't think he can get back to the MVP level, but this was a much more competent, much better quarterback than what we saw in New York last year. And I think you've got to take that into account, especially when it was Russell Wilson who was running this show last year for the Steelers. So I upgraded the Steelers a full point off of this game because of what I expect from the offense. The defense should figure it out. But, man, they need to figure it out pretty quickly because they let Breece Hall run all over him. He goes for 107. He adds 38 through the passing game. Garrett Wilson goes for 95 and a touchdown against him. You can't let Justin Fields go 16 for 22. A very efficient day for him. He averages 9.9 yards per throw in this spot. I thought the Pittsburgh offense was way above expectation. And I'm not going to knock the defense too much because this is a Pittsburgh defense that we have seen year in and year out consistently be a good defense. And so I think the defense figures it out. And I think Pittsburgh steps up in that mantle as possibly being the second best team in the AFC North.
Do you give credit to the Jets offense, who 32 points on the day? You take a look, they did have 394 total yards and a loss. Turnovers, you know, that might have been the difference there with the Jets with the one turnover, and the Steelers didn't turn the ball over.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the total yards, it's 394 for the Jets, 271 for the Steelers. When you see a 100-yard discrepancy in total yards, you expect the Jets to win the football game, and they're not able to get it done in this spot. The turnover was a backbreaker for the Jets. It was a big bit, like, that was a huge play in the game as the momentum swung over to the Steelers' side. This was the best I'd seen Justin Fields throw the football in a long time.
Yep.
And you have to at least give him credit for that. And he is reunited with Garrett Wilson, his college teammate. But this isn't an offense I'm rushing to upgrade. And this is a defense that last year heading into the season, we expected to be a top five unit that has a lot of the players that are still on there from that expectation. And they have not been able to perform either. So I'm impressed with the Steelers. I thought Justin Fields played very well. I need the Jets to do this again on offense before I believe this is going to be a weekly occurrence, though.
Okay, Samo, you're up. Sharp Money, again, wherever you get your podcast, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Pick a game. What jumped out at you?
Yeah, I mean, the game that I think is that we have not talked about yet that we should is this Raiders-Patriots game, which was not the most exciting football game. The Raiders win 20-13. But this isn't two lineups that were completely revamped and two lineups that we saw, or franchises we saw, come in with differing levels of expectation headed into the season. Everyone's talking about this Patriots team being the second best in the AFC East. They're going to try and win nine games. Their win total set at 8.5. This is a playoff team. On the other side, this is your bottom dweller in the AFC West. This is the Raiders who, you know, they're just not going to be that good. The Raiders might be good. Like, they might be a good bad team, right? So a team that you want to play when they are catching points. Geno Smith looked like Geno Smith today, which means that he's a competent NFL quarterback. He's got decent weapons out there with Brock Bowers. I thought Tucker played well. I thought you saw Ashton Jeanty play a pretty good game as a rookie. He runs hard. He's able to pick up the tough yards. And the defense, they're not great, but they're not awful either. This isn't a sieve, and you do have a good pass rush with Crosby up front as well. I'm going to be upgrading this Raiders team, and I'm going to be looking for spots where I can catch over a field goal with them, because I do think they are a very, very good team when they're playing bad football teams like the New England Patriots, who, by the way, it's not fixed. They're not that good. The offensive line isn't that good. The defense isn't that good. This Patriots team was a hype train through the regular offseason. The hype train needs to hit the brakes real fast, because this is not a 10-win football team.
Hype train, both teams, the Raiders and the Patriots, won four games last year. One felt like a sleeper as far as a playoff team, the Patriots. The other, it's Carroll, it's culture. Nobody really believes in Geno. I thought the Raiders were better today, and we have to be careful about this Patriot offense. Well, the numbers, 336, and if you look at May's numbers, they're a little bit better than the actual gameplay. McDaniels, that offense, they took a three-point lead to the break and then just completely did nothing in the second half, that being the Patriots.
Yeah, the Patriots offense couldn't consistently move the ball. I didn't think they blocked very well for Drake May. You can't have a Keyshawn Booty be your top receiver and expect that you're really going to be able to get things done. Hunter Henry, second in receiving yards today. Diggs ends up third there. You don't have weapons. You just don't have weapons. You need Travion Henderson to be a dominant player for you if you're going to be able to move the football consistently on offense. And he's a rookie who wasn't drafted all that early, who people fell in love with during the offseason because he's a a good fantasy football name to know, right? We don't know if he's actually going to be able to play down in and down out in the NFL. We just have speculation that in week 14 he could win you a playoff game in fantasy, right? So I still have huge question marks around the weapons that you've got for this Patriots team. And again, I thought the Raiders were in control of this football game. I like even when it was 10-7 Patriots, it felt like the Raiders were the better football team on the field, and they were the ones on the road traveling 3,000 miles to go play up in Foxborough.
I know this is almost sacrilegious. Dare I say the Raiders looked to be the better coach team, because Vrabel is out there during drills hitting his players and being disrespectful a la Belichick to the media because he's a tough guy. I just felt like it was a professional win from the Raiders. Remember, that number dumped down to 2.5, so the steam was going the right way with an outright win.
Yeah, look, the Raiders were more buttoned up. I will say that. Like, they were consistently doing the right thing out there. You weren't seeing any type of mistakes. You weren't seeing any type of blown coverages. I thought this was an impressive performance from the Raiders, and I'm upset I don't have a over ticket on them in the regular season, because after watching this, it's clear that these are comparable football teams, yet the win totals were two games apart between these two football teams before the season kicked off today.
We can talk about the Patriots, and we'll talk about your Dolphins here in a second as the Patriots week two, sharp money, Samich, Maher, week two Patriots travel down to Miami. But we should talk about Monday because it's fascinating. So we just talked about the Raiders. So the Chargers, couple extra days rest, which they deserve. They just traveled to Brazil. They're going to come back next Monday, week two, to close it out. Chargers are going to be at the Raiders. This number is 3.5. Very interesting. I feel like we know a little something about these two teams right now, but you do have to factor in the travel, extra rest from the Chargers. I'll say right now, even though we saw them on Thursday, a top three performance, any team in the NFL would be the Chargers on Thursday night, and specifically Herbert.
Yeah, Herbert looked awesome. It was the Herbert that we've all been kind of waiting to see. Keenan Allen looks like he's still got some gas, and he's not injured yet, so he's going to be effective out there. Quentin Johnston, I don't know what they did to Quentin Johnston that was out there last year, but that was a different dude who was out there this week for the Chargers. And you look at the defense, too. I thought the defense played phenomenal. Like, Patrick Mahomes was a freaking magician on Friday night down in Brazil. If Patrick Mahomes wasn't able to do what he did, if you face someone like Geno Smith, you're not going to see those same plays that Patrick Mahomes was able to consistently make during that football game. I have this at 3.5. I don't want to run to the window and overreact to what I think was a okay win against the New England Patriots because of where I rate the Patriots. This is one where I want to see if I ever get a 2.5, I'm betting the Chargers. If I get a 3 that's cheap, I'm probably betting the Chargers. Right now, you're seeing the market move a little bit toward the Las Vegas Raiders as well. There's a couple threes on the board as well as those 3.5. So this is one that I think it's important to watch throughout the week and then decide if there's a time where you can jump in and get the Chargers at a cheap 3.
And for new bettors, understand the NFL is up, down. And perceptively, each week, these numbers are going to be reacting to the perceptive market. And right now, there's going to be, when you wake up tomorrow and you're downloading Sharp Money, wherever you find your podcast, you're going to be hearing a lot of Raider love. You're not going to be hearing Dolphins love. All right. So let's just take a step back.
Yeah.
Sometimes the chaos and the storylines and the narrative before the season starts actually comes to fruition. And we saw it come to fruition in Indianapolis, not for the Colts, who we can get to in a second, but for Mike Samich's Dolphins, as today, by far the worst performance of the week, and it's really not even close. That was a listless, a lifeless, and a completely dead man walking team, and the Dolphins in a dome at the Colts, and the Colts beat them 33-8.
It's not good when Daniel Jones-led offenses do not have to punt the football in a game and score every single drive. Guess what happened? They scored every single drive. This wasn't even close to Miami's defense being able to step up. We talked about the issues in the secondary. We talked about the issues at the offensive line position. I hadn't talked about the issues at quarterback, but holy crap, man. Tua was awful.
Awful.
He was terrible in this game. And this was inexcusable for Miami to play like this because, yes, there's been all the negative action going around them. Everyone talking about how McDaniel's going to be first coach fired here in this spot. They were so bad. Like, Tyreek Hill was ready to fight someone on the sideline midway through the first quarter level bad. He was getting so frustrated with the overall play. Tua's running around trying to figure out what he can do because he's under pressure constantly because that offensive line is so bad. They just looked lifeless. They looked like they didn't really care to be out there. They looked like they quit on their coach before they played a football game, which I don't think I've ever seen. The offensive line was awful. They didn't care. The defense didn't care. I mean, this was just a atrocious performance by the Dolphins on both sides of the football. I'm not sure how you respond from that. I'm not sure how much I should downgrade them on that. Like, because I usually only move 2 points a week. That's my max. The Dolphins might be the worst team in football. Like, that is how far I feel like I could move them and justify it based off that 1 week performance.
I'll tell you, it did seem like the coach, it was almost like, hello, darkness, my old friend. It was almost like you could see him starting to realize it's all happening. The team, supposedly they got healthy on defense. They just gave up a score on every drive, but Daniel Jones, like, legitimately a disaster on defense. But that's not the problem. The problem was schematically and just execution on offense, where it looked like they were playing in mud. And nothing worked, nothing flowed, and this is supposed to be an offensive mastermind.
Against a bad defense, too. Let's not forget, this is a secondary for Indianapolis that everyone expected to be bottom five, bottom 10 in the NFL. You should be able to at least light up the secondary with Tua, Tyreek, and Waddle. That should be a good enough trio to be able to put points on the board. And, like, Tyreek Hill's never really open in the first half. He ends the game with 40 yards. It was on the second to last drive he got one 24-yard pass play. Outside of that, he was irrelevant in this game. Waddle wasn't very good in this game. He hurt his shoulder at one point. I was surprised that he came back. Achan's supposed to make explosive plays for you. He's not able to go out there and do anything explosive for you. This is just a rudderless team right now, Patrick. And it just feels like it's inevitable that we're going to see Mike McDaniel lose his job here in the first 4 or 5 weeks because, I mean, you mentioned the week two matchup. You got New England coming in here. I don't really want to be high on New England, but man, I don't think the Dolphins should be favored over them, even in Miami right now.
It's 1.5 right now. Miami's laying it. And again, we just talked about we both don't value, like the market, the Patriots. But if I'm thinking of a coach that's going to have a bounce back, it's got to be Vrabel over McDaniel. Because McDaniel, he was standing there with his hands behind his back, just laconically, just kind of, he just looked completely lost. Tyreek, when it goes bad quickly. You understand the issues in the locker room already. And frankly, Tua just did not look like a QB1. So right now, Miami, my only question would be, why are they laying anything to anyone right now?
Yeah, it's because it's the Patriots, right? That Patriot team came off a terrible performance against the Raiders, and this line didn't move. That's the thing. This line did not adjust from last week to this week. It was between 1.5 and 2 last week. We're sitting at 1.5 or 2 this week. So what everyone is saying is the downgrade to the Dolphins, because you better have downgraded the Dolphins. The downgrade to the Dolphins is equal to the downgrade to the Patriots. I don't agree with that. It feels like the Dolphins should have been downgraded a lot more than the Patriots based off these week one performances.
And then we get to Daniel Jones and the all of a sudden the greatest show on turf there in Indianapolis. Again, how much stock do you put into the Colts, who I thought Steichen really got into a flow with Jones, to be fair? How much stock do you put into this was a Colts team that is better than expected or just a disastrous Miami performance?
Yeah, this is the tough part for me because I'm a Shane Steichen truther. I think he is a very good head coach. I was probably one of the few people that said, hey, the contract in New York wasn't that terrible for Daniel Jones because you just get rid of him after 2 years if he's not able to live up to that number. And I look around and you look at this offense, it's like, hey, I really like Michael Pittman Jr. Love Tyler Warren. That was a good draft pick. He was awesome today. You got Jonathan Taylor in the backfield. Oh, by the way, this is a sneaky good offensive line, top 10 in the NFL. Like, this is the hard part for me because I don't want to overreact on the Colts offense because of how bad the Dolphins defense is. But at the same time, there could be some truth to the story that was told today. Maybe they don't score every possession, but they're not a bottom five, bottom six offense. This is a middling to top half of the league offense in Indianapolis. I don't think people view them as that. Now, big test in week two.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't have to overreact because they're catching at home. They stay home, the Colts. They're going to be buoyed by a huge win. You can use that momentum. But here comes Denver. Denver's laying three. Low total, 42.5.
Yeah, I mean, I like the points here. Like, there is a three available on DraftKings. It's 2, 2.5 everywhere else in the market. If I'm getting a full field goal, I'm taking Indianapolis in this game. And I especially
agreed.
After, look, we don't know what Bo Nix is. We all need to pump the brakes on Bo Nix because everyone thought he was a joke before last year. And then he played well down the stretch. But he played well down the stretch against some bad teams, right? And then all of a sudden, oh, it's Sean Payton coached him up. They figured this out. He looked awful today. And so now he has to go on the road in a dome and has to try and lead that offense to be able to put enough points on the board. I'll tell you this. If Denver plays like they did today, they lose to Indianapolis next week. If Bo Nix plays like he did today, Denver loses to Indianapolis next week. And I can't believe I'm saying this week, too. I trust Daniel Jones more than I trust the quarterback for the Denver Broncos and Bo Nix to be able to play to this level that we saw again this week, next week. So, yeah, I mean, it's plus three on Indianapolis for me if you can find that field goal out there.
Yeah, I'm going to take the points with Indy as well. So the Bengals, we understand their early season struggles. I think they won today in Cleveland.
Let
me check.
Like it.
Yes, they did. 17-16, really because of a pair of missed kicks from a first-year kicker with Cleveland. The Bengals should be concerned. Burrow, who I've got as the best quarterback in football, don't at Samich because I'm not even on Twitter, but he wasn't good in the game. And obviously the early season struggles continue. You know, Cleveland defensively, they can show you something. Flacco is Flacco, but this is a Bengals win where survivor tickets cash and it's a 17-16 winner. Should have lost this game in Cleveland.
They 100% should have lost. Let's rip off some stats, Patrick. We haven't done much stats so far here. Let's rip some stats off. 71 total plays to 49 for Cleveland, 22 first downs to the Bengals 11, 327 total yards to the Bengals 141 total yards. They miss a field goal. They miss an extra point. They turn the ball over twice. They dominated time of possession, 35 minutes to 24 minutes. The Browns were the better football team on Sunday, and the Browns went home a loser. I mean, if you had the Bengals and Survivor, you head to church, start praying because someone
likes
you
up
there. Go buy a
lotto ticket.
I mean, it is ridiculous how they were able to win this football game. And they, like, both of the picks on Flacco too were tip balls by his receivers that were, they weren't perfect throws, but they were only his receiver could catch it unless his receiver threw it back up in the air and the Bengals secondary was able to run under it. This Bengals defense is bad. They were bad today. They caught a couple breaks, and that's why you don't see more points on the board for Cleveland. The Cincinnati offense wasn't very good either. Like, that offensive line, which, again, was fixed for the third time, air quotes on the fixed, for the third straight off season, it looks pretty bad as well. We had a possession where they gave up three straight sacks and then had to punt the ball from their own end zone. This is a fugazi Cincinnati team again. They're not good.
I will say I like their spot, which we can get to in a second, but I want to talk Cleveland-Baltimore. I don't hate Cincy's spot. Going home, hosting Jacksonville, Cincy laying 3.5, a big total of 50.5. But I want to talk about Cleveland heading to Baltimore. Love the spot for the Browns. They're catching 13.5 at DraftKings. You may have a differing number at other books. But Cleveland catching 13.5, feel good about the way they played against Cincinnati. One of the two kicks made, they win that football game. They go to Baltimore. Talk about the emotional letdown for Baltimore. Baltimore is pointing to the rematch from the postseason loss in Buffalo, 80-plus points scored. They lost in dramatic fashion. You would say, well, that's a get-up spot for Baltimore. It's too many points. It's 13.5. It's an early game next Sunday. I'll take it with the Browns.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, this is a spot where I'm willing to try and take the points here because this is a Baltimore team that's going to come in, and they're going to play professional. But you're not going to get the idea where, oh, we need to absolutely blow out this Cleveland team so that we can make up for that 41-40 loss that we just took. Last year, this is the one thing you could point to. They lost to Kansas City week one. They lose an absolute ridiculous game to the Las Vegas Raiders week two as massive favorites. maybe you point to that and say, okay, they're going to come in more motivated off a week one loss this year. You're going to see them learn from the mistake of last year. But 13.5 is just still too much. I mean, the defense for Baltimore is clearly gettable. Now, Josh Allen had to play superhuman tonight to be able to put up the 41, but you can score points against them. And I thought the Browns defense was a pretty good version of the Browns defense. Like, if you go out and you ask a lot of pundits who has the better offense, Cincinnati or Baltimore, not defense, just offense, a lot of people are going to answer Cincinnati. And if that's the case, then the 13.5 is a crazy number for Cleveland to pick up.
It is. It's week two. It's sharp money. We're going to be heading into week two, and we'll close out with Soldier Field with Minnesota at Chicago. It is way too early to be laying 13.5 points in an NFL season. I'll take a professional team in Cleveland headed to Baltimore. Early game there. Before we get to Cincy and Jacksonville, we should talk about Jacksonville. They open up a 26-10 winner over Carolina, interminable game because of the weather delay. So it was disjointed, felt like Dallas at Philly, where you kind of had a rhythmic breakup there. I'll say this, do whatever you want with Jacksonville. Carolina was a dumpster fire in this game.
Yeah, this was like where Mike was wrong. Carolina fixed their offense. No, they didn't. No. Look, Xavier Leggett needs to get open. He wasn't getting open. Tat McMillan, not ready to be a number one wide receiver in the NFL. And Bryce Young looked like the Bryce Young that got benched last year today. That was a awful performance from an offense that was facing a bottom four defense in Jacksonville. Jacksonville's defense is not good. Carolina made them look like all pros. That was a awful performance from Carolina. The offense or the defense for Carolina, we knew they were going to be bad. I'm not surprised that Jacksonville was able to move up and down the field against him. That offense should have been able to move the football. They couldn't. A huge concern for me because I don't know, and this is one of the games I'm excited to watch tomorrow again just to see how bad this was. Was it Bryce Young missing open receivers? Was there nobody open? Was he constantly under pressure? Is this an offensive line problem? Is this a talent problem? Or is this a Bryce Young problem? Or is it a combination of those? Because I'm not sure why it could or how it got this bad this quick in Carolina.
Miami had the worst performance of the weekend. Carolina had the second worst. Detroit had the third. Literally, those were my big takeaways as far as bad, and we can get to the good. Miami, there's so much going on there. I don't even know how to measure that. Carolina, expectations, momentum from that offensive surge late in the year last year would carry over. It was disgusting. And Detroit just looked completely out of sorts, only scoring 6. This was a team that scored over 30 points a game last year when it mattered. Now we get to Cincy, who go home, and they're going to be laying 3.5 against a Jacksonville team that just took on a dreadful Carolina team.
Yeah, I'm not laying over a field goal with Cincinnati. No way, no shape, no how. I don't love this Jacksonville team, but Cincinnati's defense is not good. They're not fixed. They gave up 370 yards to a Cleveland offense that is not very good. They got fortunate breaks, or else it would have been a lot more than 16 points. Give me the 3.5 with Jacksonville here. This was the other game I highlighted in the look-aheads on VSiN on Wednesday. We played the over 48.5, Patrick. This reopened at 50.5. So we're going to get closing line value on both of those look-aheads. These are two bad defenses with two offenses that should be able to move the football. Shootouts, give me points, especially if it's over a field goal.
Would have to go over. Again, you mentioned you're not getting the best of it as it's adjusted to 50.5. But that's it. We've run the board. Before we get to Chicago, of course, hosting Minnesota Monday night, and that game, we talked about you saying how much you love the Ravens at the Bills. This is a game I'm excited about. Before we get to that, I gave you my three worst performances, and I'll go 3 Detroit, 2 Carolina, and then 1, obviously Miami. How about 3 standouts to you?
Look, the Bills and the Ravens stood out.
Yeah, just one and 1A.
Right. After watching that whole day of football, you're like, oh, there's some real football teams. The Chargers are the clear number 2 in my mind. I thought that was a very impressive performance by the Chargers on Thursday night or Friday night to be able to beat the Chiefs. I thought Herbert looked awesome. This is second year of Harbaugh. You're expecting that's going to be a positive for them. Man, honestly, it's the Packers are 3, and it's a team that I was super high on coming into the season. They looked like everything I hoped they would be. That defense is legit, man. That defense was legit before Parsons, and he only makes them better. He makes everyone around him better. They dominated Detroit. They
killed
wiped the floor with them. And we haven't seen Green Bay do that consistently. That was the performance that you want to see from Green Bay week in and week out. They were the most impressive NFC team this week. They were the best NFC team this week. They were better than Philadelphia was on Thursday night taking on the Cowboys. We'll see if that is a consistent thing or not, but they need to be talked about as one of the five best teams in the NFL.
You know, I kept on thinking during that game, Green Bay looked like the team coming off a 15-win season where things just carried over. And guess what they did? Coaching staff intact. Add one of the best defensemen in all of football who had an impact on the game in just 30 snaps in Micah Parsons. And Detroit looked like a team where you almost want to stay away from. But again, we see it every year with new coordinators where it takes time. Detroit may be fine. Detroit was about as bad as it gets. And we're going to see not just Dan Campbell, but Jared Goff without the protection of Ben Johnson, who we're going to get to in a second with Monday night coming up tonight. We're going to get to him. Goff was running for his life. And as far as the run, the best 1-2 combo in all of football, they could get nothing going against a Kenny Clarkless Green Bay defense.
Yeah, we didn't even see the loss of Kenny Clark play that big against an offense that loves to run the football. And here's the thing, Patrick. You say, okay, Green Bay is the team that won 15 games last year. People don't remember. Green Bay went 11-6 last year. So they're a very good football team. Five of those six losses were one possession losses to playoff teams. They were awesome last year, and they added Parsons here, and they're growing together, and added Golden, who one catch for 16 yards wasn't the explosive guy we were hoping to see. But this is a team that is one of the youngest in football that's going to continue to progress. They have the chance to take a leap that no other team in the NFL can take that same leap with them, because they don't have that youth on their roster, that many people drafted in the last 3 or 4 years. It's just a statement by the Packers. They're the best team in the NFC North and maybe the best team in the NFC.
NFC North. That's where we conclude. Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, inaugural here. Mike Somich, I'm Patrick Maher. Wherever you get your podcast, remember, we're going to be doing this every Sunday night, and then we'll drop a new episode on Thursday looking ahead as well. We just talked the North with the two teams. Let's finish it out. Minnesota's at Chicago. You can have the Ravens. You can take the Bills. I can't wait to see what Minnesota is with JJ, who hasn't taken essentially a meaningful snap since he threw like 10 passes in the national championship game. He's 22 years old. Minnesota has a tremendous roster, we understand. And then you have Chicago with the aforementioned Ben Johnson scoring 32.5 points with Detroit. Detroit scores 6 when it matters without him. Now he takes on Caleb in year 2, who was better than you think when you take a look at the statistics and the chaos that surrounded his year 1 with the Bears. All that said, Chicago opens 1. You're now looking at Minnesota on the road, laying anywhere between a point and all the way up to 2.5 at a couple of shops.
How much do people believe in J.J. McCarthy? And it's not just the coaching staff. It's not just KOC. It's the bettors. Like, the fact that we've never seen him take a regular season snap. This is his first start as an NFL quarterback, and we're installing him as a road favorite.
It's a lot of pressure.
I'm hanging out. Tomorrow I can tell you what I'll be doing, Patrick. I'll be sitting by my computer. I'll have my odds tool open, and I will be waiting for 3 to flash. Because if it does, I will be betting a lot of money on the Chicago Bears, because they should not be catching 3 in this football game. We'll see if it ever gets to that point. You're right. Tonight's game, a lot of knowns. Tomorrow night's game, so many unknowns. We have no clue what to expect from these two teams. We don't know what the ceiling is for this Vikings team. We have no idea what the floor is for this Bears team. They could be terrible. We don't know, because we don't know what Ben Johnson's going to look like as a head coach and an offensive coordinator. Bears plus 3, I'd be on the Bears. I do like Hockenson over receptions. You can get it at 4.5 plus 100 out there. He got 17 targets in 2 games against the Bears last year. 12 of those ended up in receptions. McCarthy likes throwing to tight ends. That's going to be your safety blanket, especially without Addison out there. So my one bet I do have going into this game is Hockenson over 4.5 receptions at plus 100. But I might add some Bears if we get in a situation here where I'm able to get the full field goal.
It would have been shocking tonight if Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen didn't play exquisitely, which they did. So that is a known. Dennis Allen with the Chicago defense, take a look at his 4 years with the Saints, top 10 in scoring defense each year. I think he's going to have something for the rookie, a la Patricia, Ohio State, and Arch. I think they're going to have something to confuse the kid. And you're not going to touch three. It would be bought back within 2 seconds. But I agree that would be a tremendous number at home to open up a new era with Chicago. I'll take the 2.5, which is showing right now at FanDuel. I think Chicago wins it on the field. Wait till you see the difference. The Chicago offense scored about 18 points a game last year. They'll score more than 18. And it comes down to Ben Johnson. That I assure you. Now, the total is 43.5 at most shops.
If I'm playing anything, I'm playing the over. I don't trust this Bears defense to be all that good. And I think Ben Johnson is, he's going to coach him up, man. Like, I loved what I saw from him as the offensive coordinator in Detroit. How could you not? Now, I don't think he has the full complement of what he had in Detroit quite yet, but this is an offense they invested a ton of money in on the offensive line to try and make that better in the offseason. Caleb Williams may be more talented than Jared Goff. Like, let's just throw that out there. He may have more raw talent. Now, is he going to be coached up to the point? We'll see. It would be over a pass for me. This is one of those where I don't want to get in front of an under. And this is also a game where I want to watch and pay attention in game as well. Because if this is a situation where it looks like the moment's too big for J.J. McCarthy, I want a piece of the Bears as soon as I see that situation start to show itself. If I also see Caleb Williams playing very well for Ben Johnson, Bears team total over, I'll be looking at some of the receivers, specifically Adunze over. I think there's a lot of different ways that you can try and attack this game in-game depending on how the first quarter goes.
Love the Bears. Did we overreact? By the way, you mentioned Jared Goff. I'm watching that, and I'm like, am I an alien? Because I've watched Goff put up prolific numbers. McVay got rid of him at 26-27 when he had just been to a Super Bowl. I think McVay knows what he's doing. Ben Johnson remote controlled him. But the point is, I'm watching that game today, and I'm like, how can anybody compare Love to Goff and think Goff better than Love if you've watched an ounce of football in your life? It's nonsense.
I don't understand why, and I'm a Love truther. Let's just be honest.
I love Love too. You convinced me.
How is he not always mentioned in the top 10 in the NFL quarterbacks? Why does he not like get that number consistently put next to his name when you list out your quarterbacks? It makes no sense to me that people still want to say, oh, well, yeah. You almost feel like it's this Packers thing because they hit with Favre and then they hit with Rodgers. Right. People don't want him to hit with Love. They don't want to believe that Love is as good as he is. He's one of the best 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. Full stop. Like, this isn't even really debatable in my mind.
Can't be that fortuitous to go Favre, Rodgers into another home run, and I think they might get there. And the Parsons difference was big today. So as we step back, and again, we're going to be sharp money. We're going to be dropping another episode on Thursday. Spread the word wherever you get your podcasts, every Monday morning as well. Did we overreact, and did we miss anything?
I don't think we – look, the overreaction might be the Dolphins. Maybe they're not absolutely a dumpster fire. Maybe there's something – like the talent is still there. It's just, can he get it out of them? We'll see.
They're not trying. They weren't trying, Mike.
The giving up on the coach is the really big problem. We'll see if the Bengals are any better on offense. They should be better next week. But you kind of – here's the thing. You go into – this is the day we've all been waiting for 4 months. We've been working on our priors. We've been trying to figure out how we're rating these teams, what the impact of rookies, head coaches, the free agency is going to have on these numbers. You now have live tape to watch. And out of a season where you're going to watch 17 games from each of these teams, 12 to 13 of those games are going to represent who the team is. There'll be a couple outliers to the positive, a couple outliers to the negative, but 12 of 17 data points are going to be what that team is. So it is more likely we saw the version of that team today than we didn't see the version of that team today. And so you have to make adjustments. You have to react. And you have to keep your priors, but you have to make adjustments and react after week one. So no, I don't think we overreacted to anything. I think the question is the market going to overreact to anything, right? You can get Green Bay at minus 120 as a favorite in that division. Is that an overreaction? I don't think so. But you may out there. You can get the Vikings before they play at plus 350. You get the Lions at plus 425. That's a very good number if you believe that that was just a falsity from the Lions. And so to me, it's more of a question of the market than it is us. The one division bet that I'm really tempted to play is the Rams at plus 200. The 49ers are your favorite right now in the NFC West at plus 120. Nah, man.
And by the way, that NFC North bet, a head-to-head win against the Detroit Lions.
Yes.
So you're going into that with a head-to-head win in case eventually, if they go 2-0, need a tie break. Three up, three down. I think you nailed it. We've got four up. You can't discern between the Ravens and Bills. The Bills came back down 15 in the fourth and won by a point, 80-plus points scored in that game. Number two would be the Chargers. I think you nailed that. And number four, with our list, would be the Packers. And then the three down, as we say goodbye. Miami, it'll be fascinating to see if he can get that locker room back. Carolina, that offense is not rejuvenated. And then, honestly, I just thought Detroit, it's going to take some time for a 15-win team to look that dreadful today. It's going to take some time.
Yeah, look, here's the thing. Miami, we knew this was possible, right? And we knew this was possible for the down teams, except I didn't think it was going to be this bad for Detroit. I didn't think it was going to be this bad this fast. They are the one that really frustrates you.
Remember, they didn't just lose their center. They lost their guard. They didn't just lose their OC and DC. They lost seven or eight other coaches that went with them. Your boy Dan Campbell, who could run for governor of Michigan and win in a landslide, all of a sudden, now the spotlight's on him and Jared Goff. Not a great combination. Now no. You put me in a bad mood late on a Sunday night, Samich.
Hey, so you had your run. The window is closed.
No, we didn't have a run. Nothing happened. Did we go get to a Super Bowl? We had 22 dome games last year on the way to 15 wins and got demolished by a rookie quarterback. There was no effing run, Samich.
Come on. You made the playoffs 2 years in a row. When was the last time that happened in Detroit?
All right. I got to get out of here. So, again, I do like Chicago. I'll take the 2.5, which you can find at FanDuel. Outright, Mike, waiting for that three. He's going to be waiting to next year. He's not going to get the three. And then you had a prop in the game before we say
Hockenson,
goodbye?
Hockenson over 4.5 receptions for me, plus 100. It's readily available.
All right, that's sharp money. A look at hopefully not overreacting, but deductions made, data points build from week one, a look ahead to week two. Again, sharp money, just getting started. Wherever you get your podcast, download, spread the word, and you'll have another episode coming up on Thursday. Samo, great job. I'll see you Thursday.